Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I am no longer alone. Matt Moore, the internet's working again.
We're all alone. I mean, in the Sylvia Plath sense of the word, we're all alone.
I mean, till now, I always got by on my own.
You did two podcasts by yourself, which was a bold move.
Thanks to the listeners who submitted some questions, some of them good, some of them really odd. I had to answer a question about a plastic fork apocalypse, which was fun. That was actually my favorite question, I think. It made me put on my thinking cap. And then I just edited out about, I don't know, 8 minutes of awkward silence as I tried to figure out what else to say.
Now you know, like, what Jim Rome's life is like.
Exactly. Like, some people complain about, like the 8 second pause they'll have here and there. I'm like, oh my god, only 8 seconds.
Like, Jim Rome does that every single day. Like, yeah, he's got interviews. He does like 3 to 4 interviews a day, but yeah, the rest of the time is just him talking.
Yeah, he's good.
He's massively popular.
He's good. He's really good at it.
Everyone I saw really enjoyed it. They enjoyed hearing you ramble about different subjects.
I had somebody stop me on my way to my seat last night at the game, and like introduced himself and like said he really loved the podcast. And, you know, started listening this season and liked the solo effort and stuff. And just really like, I felt like he was drunk, but he was with his dad, and they just two really nice people. It was weird. I'm usually accosted by such angry people.
I don't know what I'm doing here, really. You no longer need me. You've moved beyond me.
Because here's the point. Here's the thing. At some point, if I just keep talking to myself, I will literally go crazy. There is a shining Venn diagram here.
Amount of time spent talking alone. Probability of going insane.
Yeah.
You know who else is going insane? Timberwolves fans.
Timberwolves fans. They're angry. 0-10 in games decided by 4 points or less.
It's fun. How is that possible? Because I feel like Love hit a game winner.
No, Love hit a game tire that sent them into overtime.
Oh, okay.
And then they beat the Magic in overtime. That was the first game of the year.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Wolves writers I know, outside of John
Krasinski.
That works, right? Yeah. That's his name.
Sure.
And, you know, he last night was kind of like, this is not good because of some stuff that we'll get to. But the blogger Derek James and Steve McPherson and you are all very much like, yeah, they lost another close game. That's all right. And then and like the rest of the world is like, oh my god.
Well, it's just such a long season. It's like, well, these games are going to cost them in April. It's like, yeah, they might. They also might not. I guess I'm just really bad at panicking. In the sense that, like, I just look at him like, oh, what is me complaining about it going to do? It's not going to, like, Rick Adelman's not like, oh, I wonder what the hell Zach Harper thinks about this, if he has any thoughts on how to fix it. So it's just like, all right, it is what it is. You take it for what it's worth. Like, the problem isn't the roster. It's just decision makings at the end of the game. And I think they could adjust some things. I think they'll, I don't know. I just think they'll figure out, like, I find it unlikely a team is going to go omni-defeated in close games throughout the entire season. And they're 2.5 games out. Like, the only one that really bothers me of this stretch or these 10 games might be, or, like, truly bothers me, is the one against against Dallas. And not because of the Sean Marion foul, but just the fact that the Dallas is ahead of them, you know? Like, I know Phoenix is ahead of them, but Dallas is, like, right ahead of them right now. And that game, having that game back between them would have been nice in terms of playoff standings. But that's really the only I don't know. Like, I don't think this team is bad.
By the way, the next year, whenever there's a clear team that's going to be tanking, we definitely need to have them have their slogan be like the, you know, I'm trying to think of who it would be, but like the 2014 Utah Jazz, omni-defeated.
It'll still probably be the Bucks.
When someone gets swept in the playoffs, I'm definitely saying they were omni-defeated.
Yeah.
Definitely using that. There's omni-defeated gentleman sweep. I need something for a 4-2 loss.
And here's the thing, and we can kind of get into the Love stuff now, is I thought, I mean, Rubio, Love called out, without naming names, Love called out J.J. Brea and Dante Cunningham last night who were both visibly upset. Well, I mean, I'm right next to the Wolves bench, both visibly upset and pouting when they came out of the game because they came out earlier than their usual rotations, and I would say by about 2 or 3 minutes. And Dante was just kind of like, you could tell he was pissed off, but he didn't really throw a fit. Like, J.J. Barrie was legitimately like yelling things, not at anybody, just off into the distance. And like pouting, and I mean, went and sat at the end of the bench, which he never does. Like, it was weird. And so there's a little bit of background there of last season, Love breaks his hand for a second time. There are moments in the year where he wasn't sitting on the bench with the team, and Brea called him out for it. And basically the comments around the area were, if Love is the leader of this team, he needs to be out there with us. And so Love sees these guys not getting off the bench during timeouts and joining the huddle, and now he's being the leader of this team and speaking up in a way, and now people are upset about it because because they're not winning, I guess, because they're not a playoff team, and it's this, you can't want him to be a leader and then get mad when he tries to be a leader, and I think that the point is like, well, that's not why they lost this game. It's like, no, but Ricky Rubio had a great point after the game of, If there are these feelings between players on the team, that's way more important than one loss, which I completely agree with.
I think there's a couple of things going on with the Love thing. One, he was, in terms of why people reacted the way they did, one, he was 4 of 20. That was something that Krasinski pointed out.
John Krasinski.
Yeah, I love John, by the way. John's just great.
Oh, John, I think John's the best AP writer out there in terms of, for basketball. Like,
he's up there.
He's so good.
And, you know, he was like, well, maybe don't do that when you go 4 of 20. And that's if you're going to do it, it doesn't really matter how you play. Like, I tend to be like, well, no, if you need to call something out. The bigger thing is just, this is what fans want. They want you to call guys out privately and support them in public. That's what they want. They want to hear basically from Kuzmierzewa that Love, like, behind the scenes was, like, really imploring guys. And part of it is, like, you're supposed to, like, LaMarcus Aldridge went into the locker room last night and basically torched his guys and was like, get out of your asses. We are not losing this game. We are not losing this game. And like that, and I genuinely feel that that's good leadership. The problem is that Love has never had that moment where he's been like it always seems like whenever Love has comments, they're always negative. It never comes out the positive stuff. I'm sure he does it. It just doesn't come out, right?
Well, people just don't pay attention to it. He had a ton of positive comments over the last three seasons when he was healthy and they were good.
Yeah.
I mean, he really did. I watched him say them.
Isn't part of being a leader being like, one, holding guys accountable, but two, lifting them up when they need it?
Yes, I do think that there is a dynamic that we don't have the answer to, and it's, there are some guys where they just need positive reinforcement all the time. I was actually talking about this with a couple of people after the game last night. There are sometimes people need positive reinforcement, and there are sometimes people need to be called out to kind of get through to them, hey, you need to get your act together. And I don't know where Barea falls in that spectrum, but if that's how he feels Barea needs to be approached, and maybe he has talked to him privately and it didn't get through, or whatever he wanted didn't get through, which is weird because Barea actually had a pretty good game last night. I mean, the bench played well, and which is new. That's a weird thing, but the bench played well, and so. It's I don't know where the personality falls of how he's supposed to handle Barea. I know Cunningham's probably a guy that you just talk to. Like, he seems very straightforward, very no nonsense. So I would imagine those were more pointed towards Barea, and Barea took exception to Love saying the bench needs to score more than 5 points against Dallas. So there's a little bit of history there, but they've always, I don't know, they've had words with each other through the media or on the bench before over the last few seasons, and they've always been fine together, you know? So maybe this is just a big brother, little brother kind of thing. I don't really know.
You're also generally, am I correct in saying that generally speaking, you're of the opinion, you're like, J.J. Barea is not very good. Kevin Love is very good. Kevin Love can say whatever the hell he can. J.J. Barea needs to get his act together. Is that?
No, I'm always of the opinion. Like, some people were like, I've actually talked about this recently with like, the idea that, oh, I can say stuff about my family, but you can't. Like, I recently had this conversation. That's why it's popped into my head. But I always believe, like, whatever's right in the situation is what the deal is. So if Kevin Love is in the wrong here and someone calls him on it, there's no need to defend Kevin Love. Like, if J.J. Bray is in the wrong and someone calls him on it, there's no need to defend J.J. Bray. It's like, whatever is the reality or closest to reality that, you know, two sides can come together on, I feel like that's what's right. Like, I'm always of, that's what's, you know, whatever's right is what needs to happen.
It's weird. When Bray signed his deal, I actually said to myself, I think this is what's going to happen. Like, this situation in particular. And it comes back to me, if you're in a good situation as an NBA player and you're a free agent, I really think you should consider not leaving. Like, you know, if the offer is really insulting, sure. But if it's close, you might want to go back. Just, you might want to try and take some money off just to stay somewhere where you're going to be happy. Because I think Brea thought he was like going to Minnesota and start. And it's like, you're never going to start.
What was the offer? Like, what did he get from Dallas? Did he get an offer from Dallas?
That was during when they were purging, so he may not have even gotten the offer.
Yeah, because he got 4 years, 16, I think, from the Wolves.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. It's just 4 years is, you know, you got to be really good to get a four-year contract, in my mind.
Yeah, and it's so, I mean, maybe it wasn't even an option, but I would try very hard to, like, he's one of those guys that he really should have tried to stay where he was, because it's not necessarily going to, you know, he just seems frustrated all the time now. And it's right. Like, well, look, you're on a team where you're clearly not, you know, you weren't one of the best players in Dallas, but Rick Carlisle was willing to do stuff like that. Like, he would get, you know, well, and Rick Carlisle's the one that's like, no, we don't need a center. We got Brandon Wright. We're good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a point, too, where here he's given a pretty long leash by Adelman. I mean, there have been times this year where they've stuck with Barea in the fourth quarter, not brought Rubio back in, and people are pissed about it here. Like, how are you not playing Rubio? And I'm like, I don't know. I trust Rick Adelman to know who's going the best. And maybe that's naive on my part to just say, like, I feel like Adelman knows what he's doing when he leaves a guy out late in the game, you know? I'm sure there are times where it's justified and there are times where it's a bad decision. But for the most part, I'm just like, he knows the team better than I do. So I'll just trust him on that. But there, you know, fans don't like watching J.J. Barea. They don't like his style. And Adelman sticks by him for the most part. It's just last night, I think he saw Barea trying to guard Goran Dragic. He was like, uh-oh, this isn't going to end well.
And Rubio
did a good job. It's just he started going under screens towards the end, and Dragic just murders you if you go under the screen. So it ended up not working out. But, he pulled him, I don't know, 3 minutes earlier than he usually does, and that pissed Barea off, apparently.
Shows you how crazy the NBA is and how really sometimes it's just random, because it's like let's take facts that we know. We know Rick Adelman is a good coach. Like, we know that we can consider Rick Adelman to be good have good ability in the areas that define a good coach.
Right.
We know that Adelman had a really good – I felt like Adelman did a great job last year in a really difficult situation. Like, that team was pretty
the fact that team won 31 games, I think.
Yeah.
That was not a 31-win team with all the injuries.
And yet this year – and it's not just the close games – I just feel like overall, and here, but then it's also like I went back and looked at the at net differential and their defensive numbers, and they're both okay. And so
they're around top 10 for both of them, right? Like maybe 11-12 range.
So if we take the 10 games and we take the postulate that you and I always go to, which is like you're gonna lose about 6 games that are random. Like even let's say that they've won 4 more games. They're now they would be 21-14, and that puts them above right behind Phoenix for the 8.
Yeah.
And so, like, I mean, that defines a lot of it. That's what I think is one of the impressive things about Phoenix, is that Phoenix isn't doing the Portland thing where they won all of their close games for a long time. Like, right. Phoenix just kind of wins. Like, they drop some games, they win some games. They're very steady.
Right. They are very steady. I think the thing is like, And I was talking about this with somebody last night too. It was like, I wonder if it's simply a matter of getting over the hump. Like they've since they fell under 500 back in like late November, they're 0-8 getting over 500. Like when they get a game over 500 since then, they are 0-8. They can't do it. They can't get over the hump. And I wonder if the same thing is with these close games of like, if one goes the like if the next game if they go against Charlotte on Friday. And it's a 1-point game with 4 seconds left, and Kevin Martin hits the shot this time. and they win this game, does that one game just all of a sudden it's like, all right, now we don't have to worry about it anymore. We figured out how to win a game. And then does maybe the floodgates open a little bit, or is it always going to be a struggle? I know it's not that simple, but sometimes mentally that could be all it takes. Or they could win the one game, say, we are this good. We know how to do this, and then suck in these close games for the rest of the season. It's a weird mental dynamic.
I think every season you kind of have to learn how to win with that particular team.
Yes.
And it's like anything, like you have to learn how to do it. And until you do, it's kind of a frustrating process. I will say, like I pointed this out on Twitter last night, look, they're going to kill Charlotte. Charlotte's bad. I was on their wagon for a long time, but they've really fallen apart. Maybe they'll improve. Maybe they're just going through a swoon. Right now, they're bad. So, and the Wolves have typically killed these baddies when they come over. Yeah. Like they've murdered a bunch of bad teams.
They're at home against Charlotte. They have a day of rest. Like they should destroy. I mean, no offense to Charlotte. Charlotte's still really good defensively. They could make things difficult for the Wolves. But you're just looking at a talent disparity and the home court advantage. The Wolves have no excuse to lose this game.
Right, so they should kill them. They're going to lose at the Spurs more than likely.
Right, like they're back under 500. I mean, you know, they don't get over that hump.
Yeah, and I mean, and people probably flip out, but it's like, look, you are always going to lose to San Antonio.
Right.
You are always going to lose to San Antonio.
They usually put up a good fight for about 46 minutes, and then San Antonio's like, hey, by the way, we're better than you.
Next Wednesday, home versus the Kings, I think is a sneaky important one. That's one they need to dominate. They need to kill. They need to kill the Kings.
I don't really worry about that. I know the Kings are different than they have been in the past, but I think it's just another one of those. It's close for the first half, and then the Kings just kind of shoot themselves in the foot because the Kings just aren't good on the road.
Yeah. Then they're at Toronto, and that one's really a coin flip.
That's the sneaky one. Like, they never play well in Toronto.
See, and that's the thing is like it's like that's another one where the fan base could flip out. Like, you know, they beat the Bobcats back to 500. They lose to the Spurs under 500. Right. They beat the Kings back to 500. And then you go to Toronto, but it's like, look, you're facing one. If the Raptors are still on their roll, they're one of the hottest teams in the league right now at home in a game against what is considered to be a good team that's underperforming. That's the kind of game that a Raptors team like that will feast on. Like, yeah. They get. You know, like we're not way behind
in this game. Not to disrespect the Raptors, but just looking talent-wise, they should still win that game.
They should.
I mean, they should always. The last three years, they should have won.
The Pistons should have won last night.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, sure. Yeah, I know. I know. There's always a lot of they should do this, but that's the funny thing. It's like you look at. There's no reason to lose to the Bobcats. They're probably going to lose to the Spurs. There's no reason to lose to the Kings. There's not much of a reason to lose to the Raptors other than the fact that this team never plays well in Toronto and seems to drop that game every year. I could just be remembering it wrong, but that's how it feels. But they should win that. And then I think they've got a home and home against the Jazz. And that's the point where it's like, well, they should really be a couple of games over 500 at that point.
Yeah, but the problem, though, is like I can easily see this and still not be freaking out over them because it's like, okay, you lose to San Antonio. No big deal. You lose to Toronto. That's understandable. And then you got Utah back home and away. Well, we've talked about this before. Beating a team twice in a week is really hard. Like it's
sure. Yeah, it is.
Like they get mad at seeing you. They're like, I just lost to you. I'm pissed off. We're not losing to you at home. You know. And then they got the Warriors. And then they go Warriors, Portland, Bulls, Pelicans, Memphis. That's not great. That's
right. Yeah, that's a tough stretch. But that's a stretch they have to come out ahead of.
Yeah.
If they're a playoff team, that's what you do.
So you covered the dang trade yesterday. I didn't listen to the one. I could only handle 40 minutes of you.
Oh, God. Yeah, you don't need another 34.
What are your basic thoughts on the dang trade?
It makes sense for this year. I don't feel like – I don't know that I would – you know, throwing 3-4 years at him in free agency, I'm not a big fan of just because I don't trust – him holding up. And I know it's he's out of Thibodeau's system, that he's not playing all those minutes. Like, you still had the wear and tear. Like, that's you don't magically, like, you don't just wipe the slate clean unless you go to Phoenix. That's the only time your health like gets wiped clean. So I don't like the idea of throwing a long-term contract at him, but I also, like, if he is your backup plan to not getting LeBron James, you know, you could do a lot worse. And so you have this bird rights.
I talked to a league guy. I asked him how much he'd give Dang, and he said, I give him about 3 years, 13 per. He's like, I wouldn't go above 13. He's like, I would want to get him at 12. I probably wouldn't be able to. He's like, and in reality, his agent's probably going to get him 14.
Yeah.
That's probably what he's going to get.
Yeah.
He's like, I would want the third year, but he's like, that's actually the bigger issue is the agent's going to push for the fourth. Right. He's like, so what you're probably looking at more than likely is, he's like, because that's kind of the difference is everyone thinks that just like the, these teams, we just give them the contracts. It's like, well, you go deal with the agent. Like, you go talk to this guy and try and get him to take this deal of what he should. And it's very difficult because like, if you want the guy and you start talking and you're in negotiation, you're like, oh, we're so close to getting this good guy.
Yeah.
You want to finish. And he's like, reality, he may like he'll probably wind up getting 4 years, 14 per.
Yeah, and I just wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I agree. That's a lot. Like I would, you know, I'd be okay with it if the fourth year was partially guaranteed. It was non guaranteed.
Yeah,
I might be okay with that. But even then, I really want to keep it to 13. I know it's only $1 million per year, but it's these lines where you start giving in on this kind of things really hurts you. I think the people that are like, oh, I think you should give him like you know, 2 years, 22, and I'm like, you're never gonna get Lowell.
Right, you should do that, but that's not gonna happen.
Like, he's an all-star. Like, yeah. If you get him for that, congratulations.
But yeah, no, you've become really good at the whole like Jedi mind trick thing.
Exactly, like that's not happening.
I think that my bigger problem is just the direction of the organization, and I just think Chris Grant should go. Like, I don't have a problem with the trade. I don't think they gave up much of anything for it. And so you're buying really high on Luol Deng, who's having a bounce back year. But I look at the regime, I'm just like, I don't trust you to do what you're supposed to do. I really don't. And so I'm fine with the move, but I still want, like, it felt like a trade to save his job.
Yep.
It will probably do that. And I think that makes it a mistake, not acquiring him, but saving his job.
And it's Dan Gilbert's kind of fascinating, right? Because he didn't say immediately, I want us to get back into contention.
Right.
He was like, no, it's okay. It's okay. Just lose, get some draft picks, we'll rebuild. They got Kyrie, and it was like, all right, we're on the path.
Yeah, he had a little fit of like, you know, we'll win a championship before LeBron, he'll never win, and blah, blah, blah. But then it did seem like he calmed down and was realistic and was like, no, we're going to have to suck. Like, you have to do that to rebuild. And he was okay with it.
But then, and it was like 3 years went by, and then he was like, okay, we can't do this anymore. Like, it's time. Like, right. we got to win now. And it's funny, I was listening to Zach Lowe. Zach Lowe reminded me on the BS report about how they were behaving at the lottery and how they were like, this is it. Like, we've arrived. And it's, I don't know, you probably don't agree with this, but I always feel like hubris is such a bad idea. It just sets you up poorly because it's like, they're like, we're gonna get Anthony Bennett. Now everything's great, and it's like, okay, you landed the number one pick in like the worst draft.
Right.
I linked to it the other day. Have you gone back and looked at what this draft looks like right now?
It's not great.
I mean, you know, I was like, well, you know, I can think of like Oladipo's playing pretty well, and then I started going down the list, and I'm just like, holy crap, this thing is as bad as we thought it was gonna be.
Yeah. And it might be okay. I still think there will be good role players out of this draft, but as of right now, it looks bad. And that's the funny thing is like, just bring it back to Minnesota real quick. Is like people are mad that Trey Burke is not on the Wolves, and they're like, can you imagine what he'd be doing? I was like, well, one, he probably wouldn't be playing much, and two, he's shooting 39%. Like, it's not like he's Damian Lillard out there. Like, he's just like, he hasn't been bad. He won Western Conference Rookie of the Month, which I guess is, you know, that's something. That's something he'll put on the mantle, I'm sure. But it's like, I don't know. It's when your top rookies are just like, eh. It feels like that Mike Miller, Mark Jackson with a C year, where it was just like, hey, Mike Miller's playing well. Hey, not that well.
Like Oladipo, good, has moments, definitely shows flashes. Holy crap, that block last night.
Ooh, that was nasty.
That was nasty. And then, you know, really, it's, you know, you got Bennett and then Oladipo, Otto Porter, Cody Zeller, Alex Len. Noel's not playing.
Alex Len may have some of the worst hands I've ever seen in person.
I feel like McLemore would be better if he wasn't where he is.
Yeah, if he didn't have Marcus, even if they trade Marcus Thornton,
yeah,
I think he would be much improved.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's shooting 37%, which isn't awesome, but he's also shooting 34% from three, which is okay.
Yeah.
KCP is just in a bad situation. I feel like he's really good, but just isn't.
Yeah, you'd have to get the ball to be able to do something.
Yeah, and he keeps getting. I mean, he's shooting 33%, he's shooting 39%, which I understand is terrible, but it's also. I just feel like, again, he doesn't get any opportunities. He's not set up to succeed there.
Right.
Burke's good. I feel like Burke's good.
Yeah, he's solid. Burke is a starting point guard.
Like MCW is good, but like the Wolves aren't going to take MCW. Like,
right.
What does that do? Like, and that's the thing is like you have a veteran team. You're not in the we need a rookie to push us over the top. Like right. You're not there.
Right.
You know, you have Kevin Love, you have Kevin Martin, you have Ricky Rubio. Like, you have established guys. You got Nikola Pekarovic. Like, you have all these guys. So yeah, it's a mess. But I watched Kelly Olynyk the other night in Denver. Oh my god. Oh. I feel like this isn't being made up into a big enough deal. I don't want to pile on the kid because one, he looks like Jay from Jay and Silent Bob, and it makes me laugh every time.
Sure.
But it's like he's just a kid. He's just doing his job. But I just want to stress this point. Both executives and the rookies, everyone in the league said that Kelly Olynyk was going to be a rookie of the year candidate. Like, he was going to be like the leader for rookie of the year and make his team the best. Like, maybe, just maybe, the people that are like, well, they know better. Sometimes they know better, but this stuff's hard to figure out. Like,
well, I think the thought process, because I thought he had a good chance at it, I think the thought process was, what else are the Celtics going to do? They might as well, like, they'll probably just feed the ball to him and he can score, so. And turns out, hey, he really can't score. It's not, I mean, he needs to learn some things, but I don't think the logic was faulty. I think it was just, it was a little pie in the sky.
Let's switch topics. What would you trade if you're Memphis? Okay, because then I had this thought. As much as it pains me, because I do not want this to happen, J.R. Smith would be a pretty good addition.
Oh boy!
Right? Like
yes.
Like if you already got Tony Allen and Zach Randolph, you might as well add J.R.
What's one more?
Now I don't think the front office will ever go for it because everyone. By the way, I'm really tired of this. Look, John Hollinger works for the Grizzlies. John Hollinger has a strong say in the Grizzlies organization. But from everything I've been told, Jason Levien runs that team.
Right, and they do. And there's a committee. There is a singular voice, which I believe is Jason Levien, ultimately. But it's like a think tank. Like they it's a group effort.
I'm tired of every time the Grizzlies make a move, people saying, "Oh, Hollinger's formulas." It's like, no, stop. Like, it's like if the guy that's like your mid manager, like point, it's like blaming. You know, there's a committee that makes a decision for your office. Don't blame it all on one dude in there just because you happen to know him or dislike him or whatever.
Unless the blame is going toward you, then deflect.
Now that said, if they try to trade for J.R. Smith, I'm pretty sure John Hollinger would set something on fire.
Right.
So I can't really blame him. But what would you like? Because you know, Ken Berger reported from the D-League Showcase that the Knicks are pushing to move J.R. Smith. They're trying to move him. Reports have come out that indicate that this is like a scare tactic to try and move him straight. Which, by the way, if that's their tactic, I'm not sure that's really going to do it. like, pretty sure that he knows he's still getting paid. That's the thing you have to get to.
Yeah.
He's still getting paid.
Right. I mean, he didn't care about a possible fine for untying shoes. Like, the league met with him, said, don't do it anymore. And he's like, let's see what happens tonight. And did it. And then got fined. Like, he clearly, I don't know that consequences necessarily shape what he's going to do.
As
evident of his shot selection.
Like Josh Smith, as I said before in the offseason, like J.R. Smith should be on a contract that penalizes him for certain things.
Right.
Like, if you're able to do something that the Knicks can defend as legitimately stupid, which I think they could defend the shoelaces thing as stupid in a court of law,
right?
They get to dock him a certain amount of money.
Or 90% of his tweets.
Yeah, I mean it's like there should be more of a penalty system there, but like so we'll see if Courtney Lee suddenly catches fire in Memphis. I'm not sold on this idea. Like if you gave him like Courtney, like that's the thing is you could legitimately if you're talking about value for JR, even as terrible of a season as he's having, like you know Ed Davis hasn't blown the roof off. What if you gave him like
that's who popped in my head. I said I was thinking I would give them Ed Davis and Courtney Lee. And maybe they wouldn't want Lee because of the contract, but that's where that would be my starting point. I was like, here are two quality players.
Yeah. Now, like, I prefer something like, here, we'll give you Ed Davis and Courtney Lee, and we'll take JR, but you got to give us THJ. Like, that's who I would would want to get THJ.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
But yeah, it's probably unlikely to happen. And it's really weird. But the other thing is, I don't really understand why they're doing this, because I'm kind of like, look, they're better. Like, the Knicks, we haven't really talked because of the podcast issues, but the Knicks and Nets are better. Like, they're
all right.
I don't know, though. Like, here's the thing. Okay, I mean, Knicks fans were ripping me up about not putting them higher power rankings, and it was based off of the Rockets' loss, because I was like, well, okay, like, they beat the Spurs, and they knocked off the Mavs. That's fine, but they also lost to the Rockets, and that was another embarrassing loss. Like, you know how? But now I'm kind of like, well, no, okay, they're on a legit roll.
There is something to be said, though, about, I mean, it is still one win or one loss, but there's something to be said to having an embarrassing loss. Mm. Like, that can ruin momentum. The fact, I mean, that shot that he took, like, it's the second time this has happened this season with that team. I mean, I can't remember the last time we saw a situation like that where it happened with anybody. I'm sure it's happened. I'm sure I've just missed it. But I don't remember one. And then to have the same team that is just hilariously, you know, failing on a nightly basis do it twice in like a month. Like, there's something wrong. I blame Tyson Chandler.
Clearly, he's the issue.
He is. He shouldn't have passed it out on the rebound. Just take the free throws and be a better free throw shooter.
You know, in Brooklyn, win over the Warriors.
Yeah, that was a great win. Are these two teams better, or are they just, you know, in the East?
I think that they're better, but I think it's also like that wasn't hard to do. Yeah. Like, not like they've stopped being, oh my god, awful,
right,
which is good enough to make the playoffs in the East. You just have to be not horrible.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do.
I mean, Brooklyn's 7 under .500, and thanks to 6-game losing streaks by both the Celtics and the Pistons, they're in the 8th seed right now.
Yeah.
Like,
you know. And the part of it for me also is, and this is the problem with expectations and how they alter. So they started off the season, like, Brooklyn started off the season as, like, you and I both thought they were going to be really good. I thought they were going to be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, legit, like, hey, this team could challenge for the East.
Yeah, like I didn't think they would make the finals, but I think you and I both came as consensus of, like, that could be very difficult to get through.
Yeah, like, if Wade gets hurt, this is, you know, this is a possibility. And then they fell off the map. They fell off of the map into the sewer, to the bottom of the sewer pit, and then got sucked into a drainage hole at the bottom of the sewer where the worst sewer goes.
They slid all the way down. They're like, oh, hey, what's up, JR?
Yeah, what's up, JR? And, you know, and now they've come back up to where they're just above the sewer line level. They're no longer horrible. And now it's, well, hey, you know, they're not so bad. They can make the playoffs. And it's like, well, congratulations. Like, is that really... like, is that what you're paying, like, $200 million for?
Yeah, I've done quite a bit of radio lately, as I'm sure you have too, and I keep getting asked about, like, you know, what's a good season for teams like this? I'm just like, I don't know. You can avoid the 7th and 8th seed, get into the playoffs, make the second round, but what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, you got some playoff revenue, but what does it mean?
That's my thing with Toronto, is it's like, look, Toronto's currently in a 4-5 matchup with Washington, and I'm sorry, but I really think the Wizards are going to... they would destroy them. I think it would be probably a gentleman's sweep. Like, it might be two just because the Wizards lack a lot of focus, but if Bradley Beal has a series, they're done.
Right.
But even if they win, it's like, hey, we made the second round. Congratulations, you're playing Indiana. Where are you going? Like, any team in the East, it's like, even if you make the playoffs and you make the second round, you're facing two teams that are so definitively...
yeah, I mean,
and
I think
probably better than you.
I think with Brooklyn and New York, it's a special case in the sense that they can't miss the playoffs. You can't have all that money invested on both sides and have your team miss the playoffs, because that's an entire summer and preseason training camp of questions about that, right? Like, you get in as a 6th seed. You make the second round, and what is it? It doesn't do anything for you, but at least it avoids some questions. And you do have to recalibrate your expectations for this team because Brook Lopez is gone. You know,
so, I mean, it's basically
the Knicks are a different case, but at least for the Nets, like, Brook Lopez is gone. This is not the same team we were predicting in the season, you know, in the preseason.
It's true.
It's hard to remember that, but like, I mean, it just hit me now. It's like, yeah, they've really been disappointing. It's like, well, okay, they were disappointing before he went down, but now that he's gone down, you gotta fix how you think about them.
So I mean, like, their goal is basically to not be embarrassed.
Yes, which is that's. Do you put that on the media guide or do you sell T-shirts? I know if you're Brooklyn, you sell T-shirts. Brooklyn Nets, we weren't embarrassed.
We weren't embarrassed. I just, yeah, I don't know what the deal is. And then you got the question of, I mean, you know, oh hey, well, you know, we made the second round and yeah, we lost. I mean, is that enough for Melo to want to stay? But then there's the question of, I keep coming back to that too on the Melo thing because you know Howard Beck wrote the big, it's time to trade him, you know. So, like, let's scrap this thing and move on. Part of me is also, like, where's Melo want to go? Like, Chicago could theoretically make an offer. I don't know if they want to or not. That's going to take some time to figure out. But, I mean, Chicago, like, the problem is that Melo wants the money. Like, yeah. He wants the money.
I mean, the Knicks will do it because they're the Knicks. But the more I think about it, like, I mean, Howard's piece really swayed me. Before it was just like, no, just re-sign Melo, you know, try to adjust and figure it out for, you know, the next couple of years. But now I'm thinking, like, that is a lot of money. I am a huge Melo supporter, but that is a lot of money to invest in a guy who's, what, 29, 28?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about Dang. Like, he's much better than Dang, clearly, but that's, you know, you're going to pay a guy $24, $25 million at the age of 34? Like, I just, oh, man. I just wouldn't.
And I don't know how you improve your team. Like, I don't know. I don't know how you improve it. I guess, like, you clear cap space and go after Love.
Yeah, I guess you clear and you go after Love or Durant, right? Well, maybe Love, then Durant.
Yeah, but
can they clear enough for 2015? Yeah, probably. Yeah, if they don't have Melo.
If they have Melo, that's my thing. Is like, if you have Melo, what do? Like,
yeah, if you have Melo,
you're building the same team he's always been on, you know? You're hoping for a Nuggets 09 kind of year. Nuggets 2010, rather.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before of, I think, with, do you kind of build around him the same way you built around Dirk, you know?
Yeah.
In Dallas, like, I mean, they're different players, but I think...
Man, they found Jet, and when they had Jet, that was like, all right, no matter what happens...
Well, JR was supposed to be their Jet.
Well, there's your problem.
Yeah, I mean, they could they can't clear. No, no, they could clear enough money for Kevin Love. But it would just be Melo and Love.
It'd be like Melo and Kevin Love and like Keon Dooling, who's now retired, and like they pull him back out. And...
Did you know Leandro Barbosa is back?
Yeah.
I didn't know that till he checked into the game for the Suns last night. And I feel like I covered the NBA.
Well, you're supposed to.
I didn't know he was on a team.
Yeah.
they said now checking in number 10 or whatever, Leandro Barbosa. I was like, what year is this?
Yeah.
I mean, your team would be, assuming, well, Felton would probably opt out, but it would be JR, Felton, Shumpert, Love, Melo. That's not a title team.
And you have to give, well, in part, you can't do that either because you got to give Shump the extension.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, part of it is I'm always like, you know, you could get a lot for him. Like, why not move him and get all, he could get so much back. And
what can you get?
Tyson, but you can get so much back.
Yeah, that's the thing is that if you're going to start blowing it up, you have to move, I think you have to move Tyson and Shump together because Shump's only making 1.7.
It's why I didn't. I gotta admit, I didn't understand why everyone thinks that the Blake Griffin Melo rumors were so stupid. I don't. I'm like,
they were stupid because it was the team has had internal discussions about offering it. Not that the teams had been discussing it. It's a rumor of they might offer it. That's why it's stupid.
Yeah, I just,
not the
I think,
idea.
I think anytime that I hear a team is considering trading a guy, that they're, when they're not just like, nope, not doing it. Nope, not happening. If I hear from a major outlet that that's happening, and you can criticize the reporter all you want, but he's not Ofer, and I think that's a reasonable idea to suspect. I just think, and part of me is also is really very much thinks that they would be. I think both teams would be better off if Tyson Chandler and Carmelo Anthony went to the Clippers and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan went to the Knicks along with a pick. I think that. I just think I look at that and I'm like, oh no, like that makes more sense now. Like that helps with what both teams need.
Yeah, maybe.
Like I love Blake Griffin. It's and that's. The thing,
I mean, I like. I definitely like that for the Knicks.
It's not that I don't think that it's not that I don't think that Blake Griffin is good. I do. I would like to see him on a team where he has lower expectations because part of what drives me nuts is Blake's still so damn young and he's expected to be like the veteran playmate. It takes time. Like,
yeah. What? Man, he's really good.
He's really good. He's so good. Damn good.
Well, I think that if you did that, that's where you – I mean, if you're the Clippers, then – Melo really is almost in that Dirk role, right? Yeah. You've kind of got Chris Paul in like that super Jason Kidd mode, right?
Or, yeah.
And then I don't. Well, yeah, Jamal Crawford is your Jet, and maybe I guess that makes Matt Barnes or yeah Matt Barnes is your Sean Marion. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's you've got shooters, you've got Chris Paul, you've got you know Tyson Chandler protecting. You know, it, I guess it makes sense for the Clippers in terms of. We need to win now. It definitely makes them more of a contender now. If you're the Knicks, I would do that in a heartbeat. I wouldn't even yeah. You wouldn't even have to think about it if you're the Knicks, but if you're the Clippers, it's a big decision to make.
I mean, you know, it's one where I just keep going back to look, Chris Paul wants to win a title right now. Like he wants to win a title right now.
Can they but I guess this is where I get into like the is it too much instant gratification? Like culture seeping in of, all right. The Clippers, I think we can agree, they're not a title team right now, right?
Yeah, I agree.
I think they're very close. Like I think they're on the cusp, and I believe Doc Rivers can, in time, can get them there. But there is also the all right. Chris Paul's getting up there, or he's starting to get up there. So maybe the window's very narrow. But can you wait another like just see what they have to work with in 2014-2015? Or 2014-2015 of, like, all right, what if they can add a veteran big man in the offseason for a discounted price? Then, like, they're there, right? A guy coming off the bench, like, some kind of depth, like, then they're there. I don't think I think they're so close to being that title team.
I mean, you're trying to get basically what Tyson Chandler was when the Mavericks got him, which was, like, a discount veteran big guy. Injuries that gets healthy and then makes a run. Like that's what you're hoping for, right?
Right. But I mean, he's not this and he's got so much to do, but do you trust Doc Rivers and a coaching staff to get DeAndre Jordan relatively close to that point over the next 2 years? I mean, is it crazy to think that you could get him, you know, within the vicinity of that type of role?
I mean, Chris will be 30 in the 2015 playoffs.
Right.
And so, I mean, if you,
I mean, the window is narrow.
If your approach is Chris Paul can be good until he's 33.
Well, I guess it's not that the window is narrow. It's that the window gets extended as Chris Paul starts to decline, as long as Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan take another step.
Yeah, make the leap.
And that's where you've got to trust development at, you know, with Doc Rivers and that coaching staff. Now, I don't know that they can do that or that they will do that, but I think that's the balance that you have to figure out, right?
Yeah. And it's frustrating because Clippers fans are like, but Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are really good together. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't want to be really good. You want to be elite. You want to be like one of the best teams in the league.
Right.
And you're not one of the best teams in the league. I think that the gap is just is based off of how close you see him. Because I really do think this. I think that I really believe right now from over, and there's a lot that can change. I'm not denying that. Like the Clippers could figure it out. Like it could just click. But from where I'm at right now, there are three Western Conference contenders: Oklahoma City if they get healthy, San Antonio if they're able to fix the stuff that's going on with. And the Warriors. Those are the three teams. And right now, I truly believe the Warriors are the best team in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I think they're the third best team, but I don't think they're better than... Well, I'll say, assuming Russ comes back, I don't think they're better than the Thunder, and I don't think they're better than the Spurs. I think you put them in a 7-game series again together, and I think the Spurs win.
I buy in because of what Iguodala does with just tying them together. Yeah. They are, even when they lost last night, I was just always like, God, how are you going to beat this team 4 times out of 7?
I mean, here's the killer for this trade idea. You are committing and you are asking Donald Sterling to be a deep luxury tax team.
That's true.
Over the next 2 years. Or longer than that, actually, because assuming you re-sign Melo, you've got 3 guys making 20 a year. And, you know, right now Tyson makes, you know, a couple million more each season than DeAndre. I mean, they're already in the luxury tax. You're going deeper into it. Yeah. And you're over the apron for sure. And that's where it's like, all right, it's one thing to think about doing this deal from a basketball standpoint, but how do you put – I mean, you have to convince Donald Sterling that you will make more money this way.
Trade Jamal Crawford. Throw him in too.
Yeah, I mean, you would probably have to do that just to make the numbers work anyway.
Yeah. What else we got? I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we got to talk about.
How about – I don't know if you saw last night. Blake Griffin used his leg muscles and his torso, his core, and he in a motion where he pressed down with his body and then pressed it up quickly, he levitated off the ground. He had a ball, I think it was a basketball, in his hand, and he violently got above the rim and threw it into the hoop.
Can I try my impression?
Sure.
Can I try mine?
Yes.
Now watch here. Blake Griffin jumps up over the rim and he throws it down. He throws it down with force and motion as if he was almost dunking it.
He does. There is literally a point where he says his hand doesn't even touch the rim. There are people in the stands right now.
I'm wearing pants.
I count at least 3 referees on the court. Minimum.
Yeah, man, he is murked. Is murked the correct word? Because I feel like murked is the best word.
Yeah, he definitely murked Chris Humphreys.
He murked Chris Humphreys.
I do really love DeAndre Jordan's reaction. He just like puts his. It was like he just saw a really bad car accident. And he just had to walk away and collect himself.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this jumping all over. He was just like, I need a minute. I need to walk away.
I'll be back. Just give me a sec. Oh man, I cannot stress to you how bad Boston is. God.
Oh, they're on that slide again. I expect them to go on like another 4-game winning streak pretty soon, just to get just not horrible enough. But yeah, they're oof. It's weird that putting a team in Avery Bradley and Jordan Crawford's hands isn't working all that well.
Yeah, watching their practices look good. Rondo, by the way, looks amazing. Just as a heads up, like he's clearly not all the way back, but just.
I hope he goes to the D League. That would be cool.
It'd be cool. I think he could drop 50 assists.
Probably.
But, you know, I just. They are just a mess. Jared Sollinger's really hurt and is playing through it because he's able to, but really doesn't need to.
Yeah.
Olenek's a disaster. Favarani's a disaster. Jeff Green, I think. It's really weird because, like, okay, so Jeff Green's 3-point shooting is up, and he's not rebounding, but he's also playing small forward. I don't really know what to expect from Jeff Green. I think people want him to, like, carry a team.
He's never been that guy.
He's never going to be that guy. Like, yeah. He's always going to, like.
Because what is he? He's got to be, like, 27 by now, right?
Yeah, he's getting up there. I mean, he's like the veteran dude, and he was really great to talk to. I've got a piece coming out on him tomorrow on Friday, and everybody talks about what it's like, you know, living after heart surgery and playing in the NBA. But you know, they're just it's tough, and I think they think that, you know, Rondo coming in is going to help them. But man, I don't know.
I mean, it will. It will help.
It will, but I just don't know what the. I also don't really know what the point is.
Right, kinda that's like, the question. What's the point?
I'd rather give him the year. Like, just
well, they would probably just let him play again just for the simple fact that he won't be around the offices harassing people to come play basketball with them, which was one of my favorite stories. Of just like, hey, do you guys have your gear? Like, let's get 9 people and go play basketball. Like, he's just
It's a weird locker room too, because like the vets are all kind of huddled together, and then like there's sporadically like little clumps of young guys. It's kind of weird how the locker room dynamic works out. Denver, there are many things I've heard which I cannot say. I will say this: they've won 3 straight. It is a really complex situation in the locker room right now. It's a very complex situation that is not pleasant. So we'll see how it works out. But man, they got some issues. I was stunned the other day when, like, it was Tuesday. Andre Miller was supposed to be back on Monday, and they asked Shaw. They're like, "So Andre's back with the team? Nope, not here. Where is he? Not with the team."
Oh man, how excited will you be if he gets traded for Jimmer? Well, you won't care. I would be excited.
No, I mean, it'd be exciting. Like, it'd be fun. Like, I like watching. I mean, I like watching D-League level players.
Oh, you know, how dare you? He's a shooter.
A Jimmer Quincy Miller lineup? Sign me up. Like,
I mean,
man,
the combination
of Randolph, Quincy Miller, Jimmer Fredette.
The combination of Nate Robb and Jimmer in the backcourt, even for 2 minutes, would be fantastic.
Wow. No, man, I'm excited about Thornton. That's the one I'm like, yes! And Kings fans are like, you know he's awful. I was like, don't care, love him. Don't care, just want to watch. You want to do games?
Yeah, let's do games. We got 2 tonight, right?
Only 2. I'm kind of disappointed there's only 2 to talk about.
They're not good games either, are they?
I don't remember who's playing. I think they will be, actually. You may not.
I know the Heat play.
The line jumped, so the Knicks were, I think, 6.5 when I did picks this morning on a video, which I do every morning on CBSSports.com. I think it was 6.5. Heat were favored over Knicks at Madison Square Garden. Bano's out with some sort of, with, I think Bano's out with not wanting to put up with Mike Woodson's crap. And then Tyson Chandler's got a respiratory infection that he got from Raymond Felton. So if he's questionable, if he's out,
wonder how he got it from Raymond. What were they like, where were they hanging out?
I bet it wasn't even Tyson's fault. I bet that Raymond
got pissed off and just started coughing on everybody.
I was gonna say something really terrible that involves J.R. Smith.
Oh,
Eskimo brothers. Anyway, so
what's the thing? Wedding Crashers, let's play Tummy Sticks.
The Knicks are down. The Knicks are 8-point dogs at MSG.
To the Heat.
To the Heat.
Yeah. I don't know why that cracked me up. Heat. Yeah, I'll go with the Heat. I wrote about the Heat today, if you guys need to kill some time. How they are – I'm not the first person to write about this, but they are kind of the best shooting team in history right now. No one has ever had as high of an effective field goal percentage. They're one of 17 teams who have shot 51% or greater in a season right now, and the three-point shot that they use has made it to where they are the best shooting team in history, in my opinion.
Sorry. If you read that in your Atlanta, Chicago, Charlotte, like, why do you not just start tanking? Immediately.
Oh my god! I mean, Jesus.
Why would you want to play them?
It's
unreal. You want to go through that?
Yeah, just they're unreal.
I'm taking the Knicks tonight. I think Tyson plays through the respiratory infection because he's a tough son gun, and I think that the Knicks have played well enough, and the Heat don't care enough. I think that before February 1st, I don't think the Heat care enough to win this game.
Okay, that's fair. I'll still take the Heat, but I don't mind that logic.
The Thunder are in Denver tonight. I am going to the game here in a little bit.
Oh, okay. That's not bad. That'll be fun.
And, you know, without Westbrook, which is a bummer because he's really the villain around here, the Thunder are really inconsistent. They look dominant or they blow weird games. The altitude obviously messes with teams. It messes with teams with weird rotations, which the Thunder kind of have weird rotations.
Yeah.
the line came up a little bit. It opened at 2.5. It's now 3. The Thunder are favored by 3.
Ooh.
I'm taking Oklahoma City because of free throws. I think it'll be close, though.
Ooh. I kind of want to take Denver.
It's not a bad pick. Yeah. That's 3 straight right now, regardless of what the context was.
I'll take the Thunder, but I would feel a lot better if it was 2.
So on TNT tonight, you've got Kendrick Perkins defending J.J. Hickson.
Jesus. Am I working tonight? I don't think I am. I may go to a movie. I may go to a movie and then just watch all of Durant's plays on Synergy.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, Wilson Chandler is the prototypical guy that should defend Kevin Durant exceptionally well. He has every physical tool to do so, and Kevin Durant destroys him every time they play.
And Durant is on a crazy hot streak right now.
Royce Young is caping up for him for MVP. He is.
Hey, I think it's a great argument. I don't like awards this early, but I mean, the Westbrook factor of him not being healthy, the numbers Durant is putting up in his absence, like, it's there. Also, yeah. I picked Durant in the preseason, so I could use a win in that sense.
I still look at LeBron. I just like,
yeah, it's 60%.
Are you guys kidding? Are you kidding me? He's shooting 60%.
Like, yeah, it's hard to go against LeBron. I do think that there is some valuable narrative, that, like, actual, like, narrative with value. In talking up the Durant story, you could give it to either of them at the end of the year if this keeps up, and I would be very happy.
Here's what I think is weird: is they're 4-3 without Westbrook.
Right.
Royce wrote this morning over at another site, and it's interesting because I feel like they're gonna wind up winning a bunch of games, and then everyone's gonna be like, "And look what Kevin Durant did!" And Russell Westbrook wasn't even around for a lot of the year, and it's gonna be like, "But they weren't good when Westbrook wasn't around." Like, your argument would be great for Russell Westbrook being MVP.
I ran off the stats on yesterday's solo pod, but during these 7 games, it's like he's averaged like 35 a game on 49% shooting, and his usage rate is way up. It's like, I don't know, like 36% or something like that, but he's only averaging like 1.9 turnovers. Like, he's just not making mistakes. It's kind of incredible.
Yeah.
He's just – Kevin Durant's good.
Kevin Durant's really good.
Yeah.
Let's see. Reggie Jackson versus Ty Lawson. That's fun.
Ooh, that actually will. I mean, Lawson should shred him, but Reggie
Jeremy
can come
Lamb
back up.
Versus Evan Fournier, because Evan Fournier is next up on Ryan Shaw's wheel of shooting guard death. Or I guess he's back to starting Foy.
Yeah.
So it'll be Foy Lamb, I guess. That's who it'll be.
No Thabo?
Maybe Thabo, sure.
Yeah, he'll at least start.
By the way, Jordan White and I, every time that Foy does anything, it starts Hank Staygold's Pony Foy.
Oh, God.
It's just like my favorite thing on Earth.
I love Jordan White, but he is the worst.
He is the worst. It's true. Jordan is definitively the worst.
Jordan's a great guy, but he's the worst.
And then Kevin Durant versus Wilson Chandler, Kenneth Faried versus Ibaka. That's fun.
Ooh, that will be fun.
Or I can't wait for Kenneth Faried to have another 25-15 game and Brian Shaw to single him out as the problem if they lose. Shaw hates that guy, man. I don't get it, because I'm a convert to Faried, where last year I was like, do you realize how bad his defense is? Like, look at his rotations. And after watching him for a full year, I'm just like, he just does things, man.
Yeah, like there are some very noticeable warts, but overall you're just like, I'll take it. He makes things happen.
A part of it is just, and everyone's like, well, yeah, but where's his effort in terms of defensive rotations? Like, you have to learn that. Like, he's still trying.
Yeah, it's not a matter of effort. I think it's a matter of recognition.
Yeah.
Like there aren't points in the game where you question his effort. It's just, did he see what he needed to do next? Yeah. I don't like characterizing his effort. So,
I want to congratulate you on the Niners advancing.
Oh, thank you. It was it was more stressful than it needed to be, which I will blame the weather on. But the Packers did play really well. But yeah, that was fun. How are you doing?
You know, here's the thing. I thought the Chiefs were going to lose. I thought
you did.
You
said that. You said that on this podcast.
Yeah, and I said that weeks ago. Actually, yeah. I said, "Well, this is great, but they're going to lose the first round. That's what they do. It's the life of a Chiefs fan." And I thought it was going to be 31-13 early in the week, and then by Saturday, I'd actually been like, you know, I feel pretty good about this one. I think it's going to be like 28-20. Like, I think we're going to lose, but we'll hang. I think it'll be all right. And I didn't believe when they were up, I think, like 10. I didn't believe it. I was like, all right, whatever. You know, but it's nice that we got off to this good start. When they went up 28, they did the only thing they could do, which is convince me. I was like, oh, it's over. After the first interception after halftime, I was like, oh, it's over. It's done. We get, like, there's no – and you said, you're like, it's really hard to lose a 28-point lead.
Right, which it is.
It is, turns out. But what's weird is by the time the fourth quarter started, I also knew. I was like, nope, this is happening.
That was the thing. I think I tweeted that. It was still like a 2-touchdown game, I think, when I tweeted it. But I kind of did it in jest, thinking, like, that'll be funny to go retweet.
Mm-hmm.
Because you kind of – it did feel like – I mean, it's confirmation bias at this point. But in the moment, it really felt like, ooh, this is not going to end well.
You know, it's weird because everyone talks about like Lynn Elliott missing 3 field goal attempts and a 10-7 loss in 96. For me, it always goes back to there's an Elam kick that the Broncos hit.
Yeah,
that was the first time that sports ever affected me emotionally.
Okay,
that's the first time that because I used to watch, but it was like, all right, whatever. But that was the first time that it was like I got emotionally upset, and that set off about a 10-year span where Chiefs games were live and die for me. And I'm kind of past that point. That one was worse. That game on Saturday was the single worst sports moment I've ever experienced. Everyone, and you have talked about this, about how, like, if you lose close games, it's like, ah, but there's like a part of it that's fun.
Yeah.
That wasn't fun.
No, there was nothing fun about that.
Nothing fun about it. And it was like, if you won a title, then yeah, it's like, well, all right, we won one, but we lost this one. That hurts. And that's why when Spurs fans talk about it, I'm like, you have 4 titles. Like, you're fine. Like,
right. It's
cool.
That was the thing as a Braves fan, like 96 through whatever, people are like, oh, the Braves always lose the playoffs. I was like, I did get to see a World Series. Like, they won in 95. So, like, that's always been my thing of, like, yeah, that sucks, but, eh, I got to see one.
And when my wife and I got together, I was confused because she was like, well, the Chiefs are terrible. And I was like, no, like, they were, like, a dominant team in the 90s. She was like, well, they won any Super Bowls? And I was like, well, no, but, like, it was really complicated. And, like, one time it was, like, really cold and, like, there's, like, it's like the worst of excuses. And now I looked at how long it's been since the Chiefs won a playoff game, and I'm like, we're one of those teams, man. Yeah. Like, we may be that team outside of the Browns. Like,
and that was the thing why I never got too down about the 49ers when, like, Alex Smith was terrible for them and they were just going through offensive coordinators every year. I was just like, all right, I did get to root for a champion quite a bit as a child. Like, that does kind of tide you over for a while.
It was also killer because it was, you know, everyone jumped on the, oh, Chiefs are frauds, just like I told you, and you want to be like, but they lost their best player on the first series of the game, and they lost their best cornerback, and, like, they had, like, 9 devastating injuries, and they had a 28-point lead on the road in Indianapolis. Doesn't that count for anything?
I mean, they still should win the game, but, you know, arguably the best running back in the league this year did go down early.
And then it's also, you know, everyone was like, it's like, well, this is great, but you know, in the playoffs, Alex Smith is going to screw up. Like, everyone was banking on that. Even I was. I was like, well, Alex Smith's going to not make he's not going to make the throws.
Yeah.
And then he had, like, the single best game he could have possibly had.
That's the thing. In playoff appearances, he hasn't had many of them, but he's actually pretty good.
He's pretty good.
He was really good in that one run.
On that last throw. I was like, no, he got it there. Dwayne Bowe not dragging his feet on that last catch. I know it was tough. That's why he gets paid the money that he does. Like, that's what he's paid to do. It's almost like, you know, look, basketball's a little bit different because I think you can work for another option. Like, you can work to create a different situation. But if you're going to go down that route, Melo gets paid to make those shots. Like, that's what he does. And historically, he's made them, not so much lately, but.
Yeah. You know, I normally don't root or promote this kind of thinking, but you can still invest yourself in the playoffs and root for the Broncos to lose.
Oh, you think I haven't? I don't think we talked about it. Let me explain. My friend who's like a bandwagon Chiefs fan, he came on board a couple years ago, which I don't know what he's bandwagoning on, but he just kind of decided to become one. He was all upset that they lost to the Chargers. And I was like, no, it's perfect. Are you insane? And he's like, why? And I was like, because they can't feel good about that because they lost to a team that was playing all of their B players, like their second string and third string guys. So the Chargers get absolutely no satisfaction at the win. And we let in the one guy that the Broncos fans don't want to see in a playoff game. Right. This is perfect. Everything is perfect. Like, I hate Phillip Rivers with every part of my body, and yet I still hate him less than how much I hate the Broncos. So it's like...
Oh.
Yeah.
Sports,
I'm
huh?
not in a healthy place right now with football. No. It's not good. How you feel about that Niners-Panthers? You guys are favored. Did you know that?
Yeah, I don't like that favoring. I feel good. I mean, the Panthers kind of... It was a close game, but the Panthers kind of just, like, handled them in their regular season matchup.
Yeah.
I'd obviously feel a lot better about it if they were in San Francisco. In Carolina, it'll be tough. But there is something... You know, there's that whole cliche of, like, backs against the wall and stuff. I do actually like this team on the road in a playoff environment. Just because I think that guys like Navarro Bowman, guys like Patrick Willis... secondary members who aren't Dante Whitner. I think they will, like, you know, Alden Smith, Justin Smith, I think those guys will step up and they will embrace the we're the only ones in here that believe in us kind of thing, even though there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people rooting for them outside of the stadium. But I think that mentality, they're very good at that mentality. I think Frank Gore is very good at that mentality. And, I mean, the Panthers are damn good. Like it's gonna be a really tough matchup, but I'll ride with the Niners. I think they'll win the game. I think it'll be extremely close. I think you're gonna see another coming down to last team to have possession, like actual possession. But yeah, I don't know. I feel decent about it. It's weird that I'm hoping for the Saints to win. It's weird that I would rather face the Saints than the Seahawks, but that's just where we are at this point.
That is weird.
No. I take that back. I want them to go into Seattle. I want them to win in Carolina, and then I want them to go into Seattle, and I want them to win. Like I want the satisfaction of that as a fan.
Wow, bold.
It's stupid, but it's bold.
When the Secret Life of Walter Mitty comes on, that'll probably be on what, like Stars, probably at like.
Yeah, that's gonna be Stars.
At like 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I would like to get your thoughts on it in 6 months.
Okay.
It was interesting. Here's a weird thing. It was like a comedy, and yet there was not a single audible laugh the entire movie. And yet I still felt like it was funny.
I felt that way about Sideways, but it was also, mm-hmm. It was very hyped up. Like, I'd say the majority of my friends had seen it before I did, and they just said, like, oh, it's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just going to love it. And I watched it, and it was really good. Like, it's one of my favorite movies. Like, it was really good. But I didn't find myself laughing out loud all that much. Like, and I enjoyed it. I was like, oh, that's humorous, but I think it was like overhyped in terms of comedic value to where it wasn't as funny to me, but maybe that's a similar type of experience I'll have.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll be back tomorrow if things stay above freezing in Minnesota.
Yeah, the 0 degrees is apparently the cutoff because it's 15 right now, but it feels like zero with the wind chill. So as long as we don't dip below negativity, I will be talking to somebody.
I'm pretty sure that this podcast is going to dip below negativity.
Usually does.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.